At Kroger Pharmacy, CARE is making it easy to get vaccinated. CARE is helping you stay protected from flu, COVID, and RSV. Seasonal vaccines are available 7 days a week with evening hours. CARE is giving you a shot at staying healthy this season. Walk in whenever is best and get multiple vaccines in one visit at your local Kroger Pharmacy. So come and get the protection you need while protecting those around you. Kroger Health, a world of care, is in store. Visit Kroger.com/vaccines for more. Restrictions and exclusions apply. See site for details.
Okay, folks. How is that? Any luck? Hopefully you guys can hear me. I am not a techo wizard. All I can do is hit the buttons that say it's supposed to be okay. And then somehow things don't happen. Oh, look at that. Now I'm being told the audio's good. All right, Matt, John, thank you very much. Glad to finally get this thing squared away. All right, so here we go. We're going to be with you now for at least the next hour. We'll see how it goes. And depending upon you folks, if you want me to be on longer, we'll try to do that as well. But the bottom line is the New York Football Giants are 0-1 as they get ready for the Washington Commanders down in D.C., actually in Landover, Maryland, coming up on Sunday. All right, so a couple things to keep in mind. Number one, the Giants had four players who did not practice today. Gunnar Olszewski, their kick return guy, with a sore groin. It's been that way for a couple weeks, and they expect him to miss a few weeks. Darius Slayton entered the concussion protocol. That's an indefinite period of time. You just have no idea once a player goes under that type of category or classification. You just don't know how long it's going to be for him to come back. I've seen guys come back within a week and not miss a game. I've also seen guys miss well more than a month. I did see Slayton doing some working out on the side with the trainers today. That's a good sign. But he has yet to be cleared for physical contact, according to head coach Brian Daboll. And that's one of the steps that you have to be able to pass before you can get back into active duty. So it remains to be seen how long Slayton will be out. Darius Mursau, the rookie linebacker, sore knee, did not practice today as well. And Nick McLeod, right corner, did not practice because of a sore knee as well. On the positive side of the injury ledger, Micah McFadden, inside linebacker, coming back from a groin injury. He did practice in full. That is very good news. Giants are very glad to have him back, especially if Mursau has a knee issue. Last weekend against the Vikings, Daboll played Mursau a lot. McFadden was still a bit slow coming off of his nasty groin. And Daboll said that he was going to go with Mursau as long as he was the hot hand and seemed to have an idea of what was going on and was playing, you know, pretty well. He was going to stick with him and not pull him out. As you saw, you know, he wound up playing most of the game. So McFadden in full today, that's great news because I would expect that he would be back in the starting lineup again on Sunday against the Washington Commanders. All right, so let's see. Where do we start? All right, we know what happened last week, right? The game was a skunk all the way around. The quarterback, the offense, the defense, I guess even the special teams when you consider that Slayton held a muff punt, which fortunately Dane Belton recovered. And Dane Belton, by the way, is that guy a magnet for a football or what? You know, he doesn't get full-time reps every week, but it seems like whenever he is in there, somehow a loose football finds its way into his hands. So good for Dane Belton. All right, let's see. Oh, G-Man says, let's see, okay, embarrassed by the performance, been there in the stands in front of all the greats. Yeah, I get that, G-Man. I get that. You guys, I'm sure, are aware of the Giants on the Believe Network. Bob Papa and Carl Banks do a pod show. And Banks referred to a story at halftime where he was talking to Lawrence Taylor on the sidelines. And Taylor told him, I could just pick 22 of us guys right now and go out there and compete and beat these guys. Yeah, it looked like the Giants were in preseason week four, didn't it? Let's be brutally honest about it. The Giants looked like they were playing a preseason game with their starters, and the Vikings looked like they were playing opening day of the regular season. That's what it looked like. There's no other way to put it, okay? Who did well for the Giants? Dexter Lawrence had a really good game, 8 quarterback pressures on 24 dropbacks. That's a good number by anybody's count. Had a sack in there as well, and a pass deflected that wound up being intercepted by Muisao. The rookies, Muisao had an interception. Neighbors caught 5 passes, did have 1 drop, but did catch 5 passes, including, I'd say, 1 really nice one where he reached up and made a cool stab. Drew Phillips, the cornerback, forced a fumble. Tyler Newbin was very active. I believe he finished with 7 tackles on the day. So you had, a handful of rookies who made an impact and made flash plays. The problem was the veterans didn't make them. And that's the disappointing part, is that on a day when the rookies were playing their first NFL games and they came to play and they put up some flash plays, the rest of your team didn't. Most people would expect that your veterans would put up the flash plays. And maybe the rookies would make a bunch of rookie mistakes and not exactly play well. Well, not the case. It was exactly the opposite for the Giants, which, if you really wanted to find the absolute thinnest silver lining possible, it would be that the young kids weren't overwhelmed by the spotlight of day number one of their NFL careers, and they actually did something pretty cool. All right, let's see. We have a bunch of stuff from G-Man. I mean, I could go through all of this, but there's no sense in really going through all of that stuff because, it's just hammering home what we all saw. You see, the one thing I will say here, I could sit here and just tell you the Giants did bad, but you saw that already. So where's the information? What I'm going to tell you is this. I think there are a number of reasons why the Giants did not perform well on Sunday. And the first one, in my opinion, is that their starters did not have a great deal of game snaps together during the preseason. Okay? Flat out. Guys, I've been on this for years. This is not a new song. I've got a whole orchestra behind me. And I've been singing this tune for a very, very long time. I do believe that starters, especially guys who have not played together very long, need to play at least 40 to 50 snaps during the course of the preseason together. If you watched the game the other day, what you saw was timing that was so disjointed. It looks as though guys should have been wearing name tags to introduce themselves to each other during the course of the game. Think about this. Jones's timing was off horribly. His receiver's timing was off horribly. Howard Cross was down on the field and said to me flat out, the routes were being run very poorly and they were not being timed properly and they were not in the right spots. Well, that's not good. And that doesn't help your quarterback, who was already struggling on the day. Your offensive line, which gave up 5 sacks, all right, I think 1 was totally their fault. The other 4 had to do with a combination of things. Yes, it had to do with Jones's timing being off. Could it have possibly been because some of the routes were off? Possibly, yes. What else? Well, if you watch the game carefully enough and you look at the offensive line, it basically looked like the pocket was the serrated edge of a hedge clipper. A A pocket is supposed to be a U, right? Front of the pocket's the bottom of the U, and then around the sides, you have the rest of the U. That's how a pocket is supposed to form. That's why they call it a pocket. Too many times when you saw Daniel Jones go back to throw, the offensive line's pocket was like a serrated edge. There was a little penetration here, maybe some protection here, little penetration here, and then penetration here. The pockets were not clean. There were various bumps and various folds and various points sticking in from the perimeter of the pocket, which tells you the timing of the offensive line was not in sync. So, we've got the quarterback's timing being off. We've got what we appear to have information from Howard Cross that the routes were off. And what we had was not clean pockets. Now, yes, on four of the five sacks, did Jones have time to potentially get rid of the ball? The answer, in my opinion, is yes. I will not dispute that. I think Jones played very poorly. And I do think that on four of the five sacks, he could have gotten rid of the ball. He either held it too long or stepped up and ran into a sack. Now, it's very easy to just blame him for those. But again, if the routes weren't being timed right and run right, well, that's a problem. His timing's off, so that's a problem. And the fact that there were serrated edges and it wasn't a clean, smooth, circular pocket is also a problem. In other words, it was a skunk. The offense was a skunk in multiple areas. It was very, very poor. The offensive line also did not open very many holes for the running game. I mean, look, do I really have to go get the numbers when you see like your leading rusher? I mean, Singletary had what, 37 yards, I think it was, rushing on the ground? I mean, come on. It was terrible. It was terrible. So, you didn't run block, and then your passing game was totally disjointed because of a number of factors that I've just explained to you. So now, what in the world are you supposed to do about it? Somehow, you have to find your timing. Now, you can practice all you like. And Daniel Jones did take all of the practice reps the entire summer and looked really good doing it. And it looked really good from the receiver's perspective as well. But we all know that practice is not the same as games. That's a fact. So the two quarters that Jones played in Houston, in my opinion, was not enough to get him ready. But again, this is what happens in today's NFL. Because of the rules, the salary cap issues, and everything else, okay, here's the problem. Coaches are paranoid. They don't want to get their quarterbacks hurt during the preseason. And they pull back on the reins. I ask you, folks, and I'm not trying to be funny, but again, I don't just sit here and complain. There will be writers who will just complain and they will call for benchings and whatever else they want to do. I try to find reasons and I try to offer possible solutions. In looking for reasons, I believe there's another reason here. And by the way, Tudo, thank you so much. Appreciate it so much. And, you know, this guy comes through all the time. He's a big-time fan. He's a regular on the program. And, hey, can't thank you enough for the pop. And certainly hope that we give you something tonight to enjoy during the course of tonight's edition. But let me tell you this. There were a handful of quarterbacks, and I haven't checked on all of them during the course of the week. But Daniel Jones did not play well. Aaron Rodgers did not play well. Joe Burrow did not play well. Kirk Cousins did not play well. All four of those quarterbacks have what in common? Well, they missed at least half the second half of last season, if not more. So they had not been in a regular season game for about a year. Each of them, if they played at all during the preseason, barely played. Is it any coincidence that all four of those quarterbacks had very poor days this past weekend? I simply give you the facts, and I ask you that question so that you can judge for yourselves. I personally don't believe that it's a coincidence, and I'd like to believe that maybe had these guys played some more during the preseason, maybe they wouldn't have been so offbeat in week number one. A friend of mine said to me, well, what about Matt Stafford? Matt Stafford had a good game. I said, yeah. Didn't Matt Stafford play the entire 2023 season? He didn't miss the second half of last year or the whole season. He played. So therefore, unlike the other four that we just mentioned, he was not in the same boat, not in the same classification as those guys. The four that I mentioned all came back from serious injuries. Just something to ponder, folks. Just something to ponder. In any event, we do know that the Giants' starting offensive line, because of either, you know, Schmitz had a sore shoulder, Runyon had a sore shoulder, it was deemed impossible for them to really get a whole ton of snaps for what was going to be their starting five offensive linemen. And I understand that. That's not something you can have revisionist history on. You know, you had one or two guys who were dinged up, so there was a legitimate reason why they could not start their starting five offensive linemen for a slew of preseason snaps. I think it would be much better if they could have, but at least there was a reason not to do it. All right. So I've given you some reasons why I think the passing game was disjointed. I've also given you some reasons why I think the offensive line was disjointed, which of course also feeds into the passing game being disjointed. Defensively, I was extremely disappointed. The Giants have a very talented front seven. Now, Muisao, obviously being a rookie and a third-day draft pick at that, it was quite a surprise, you know, for him, I'm sure, from the time he was picked out of UCLA to find out he'd be an opening day starter for an NFL team. But again, that was not something you could help. Micah McFadden had gotten nicked up, and they weren't really confident about him giving it a full go. So that's what they wound up doing. I'm sure if Deontay Johnson had not gotten hurt during the preseason, I'm sure he would have been the next guy up. But again, that wasn't the case. But I don't want to put it on him because he had interception. He was active. And he made a big play. So I don't want to put this on him. But the Giants allowed only 3.5 yards a carry during the day. So I think they were adequate against the run. I think they were okay. The rush defense was okay. Not great. Not terrible. But okay. It was the pass rush that was extremely disappointing. Whether it was Brian Burns, Kayvon Thibodeau, Aziz Ojulari, Giants just did not get enough heat. And what did we all say before the game? Is that Sam Darnold, he wilts under pressure. You know what the recipe is. It's really simple. You get pressure on Sam Darnold, and he will make a slew of mistakes and practically hand you the game. And the Giants didn't get heat. They did not win their one-on-one matchups. Talking to Brian Burns today, he said, we didn't do enough on first down and second down. And then they throw all kinds of schemes to prevent the Giants' edge rushers from getting through, including a lot of chips and so forth. And they just didn't fight through it enough. And then, as Kayvon Thibodeau said today, they got down and they kind of lost their mojo. That can't happen. It can't happen in week one. It can't happen in week two or any other week after that. These guys are professionals. They know it can't happen, but it did. You can't put that milk back in the bottle. It happened in week one. What you can do is make sure it doesn't happen in week two, or three, or four, or five, or any time through the end of the season. This front seven has too much talent to put that performance on the field. And what did we tell you before the season? The Giants' front seven is the key to them potentially being a top 10 defense. If they're clicking on all cylinders, they can be really good. And they can help make the difference for a secondary that is younger, somewhat inexperienced, and needs the guys in the front seven to drive that train. Now, credit to the Vikings. Sam Darnold threw a bullet to Jefferson on a slant route that was impossible to defend. Jefferson ran a perfect route. Darnold threw a perfect strike. Deontay Banks was in perfect position. He tried to knock the ball out, did everything that he could do. And you know what? Jefferson's a great receiver. So he ran a perfectly timed route, caught a perfectly timed pass, and then held on to the ball as if he had crazy glue on his hands. And Banks couldn't rip it away as they went down. So he held on for a Minnesota touchdown. That's just a guy making a play because he made a play. Justin Jefferson may be the best receiver in this league right now. So I don't really have problems with Banks on that play at all. I still think the kid has tremendous ups. And that touchdown is not one of the plays that would have bothered me if I were the defensive coordinator. All right, so what do you do now this week? What do you do this week if you're the Giants and you have some of the issues that I've explained to you after week one? Well, got to watch some of practice today during the open portion. The one-on-one drills with the receivers and the corners and Daniel Jones throwing, he was razor sharp today. He is mentally tough. He can take what people are dishing out. He learned very well from Eli. and he's not going to wilt under the heat in the kitchen. Now, he still has to go out on Sunday and prove it against the Washington team that has lost three straight to the Giants. And as I went through my notes earlier, I happened to notice that over the course of time, since the 2018 season, the Giants are 8-3-1 against Washington. 8-3-1. Daniel Jones has performed particularly well against them on a number of occasions. So, to be honest with you, as bad as it looked on Monday or last Sunday, and I know that is not the talent level of this Giants team, you could argue, or at least hypothetically, talk about the fact that they're playing a team that they have historically been very good against. They're not playing a heavyweight, for instance, a division rival that has owned them like Philadelphia or Dallas. Nope, that's not the case at all. They are playing a team that is also coming off of a loss. Washington lost to Tampa, as you know, opening day. In fact, that score was 37-20. They are rebuilding their pass rush. They still have a very porous secondary as Baker Mayfield shredded them to ribbons. And they've got a very athletic rookie quarterback, first-round pick Jaden Daniels, who runs around like a track star. And as Brian Burns said today, they gave him a lot of RPOs. They gave him a lot of screens. And they gave him a lot of quick game throws to try to help him out and to give him a chance to try to function in this offense. Well, it's only week two this week. I don't know how much more Washington can open up the playbook for this brand new, fresh from the farm rookie quarterback. We will see. But that certainly could be something that makes this game a little bit more appetizing for the Giants. All right. Let's see if we can get to a couple of your comments. John Morano says, where was Thibodeau Sunday? Horrible game for him. There's no getting around it. I told you last year, Thibodeau was doing real well till the final month of the season when he ran out of gas. But up until then, he was looking really, really good and certainly had progressed significantly from his rookie season. Well, I don't know why in week one he didn't have it going. But we saw enough of him for three-fourths of last year to know how good he can be. And we've also seen him do some things to the Washington Commanders, as you know. So, let's see. You know, Washington's totally turned over their coaching staff. Dan Quinn is down there now, the former defensive coordinator from the Cowboys. In fact, I'm looking here. Let's see. Their offense... Coleman's at left tackle. Wiley's at right tackle. I mean, if you're the Giants front seven, you have to dominate this team. You have to. It's certainly not as good an offensive line as what the Minnesota Vikings have. So it's time to wake up. Smell the coffee. And I know, I get it, folks. September is an extension of preseason football. We all know that. And I do subscribe to that theory. That's what it looks like half the time. As Brian Daboll said today, there were 16 teams that are starting off 0-1. I don't know how many of you know this, but since the AFL-NFL merger in 1970, only 54% of the teams that won opening day went on to make the playoffs. 54%, which is barely more than a coin flip. And that's over 53 years of NFL football. So that's not a fluky stat, and it's not a small sample size. What it tells you is that the week one, one loss result is a very, very small factor in terms of what can happen to your franchise by the end of the season. And after all, it is only 1/17 of your schedule, right? You don't need to be a brilliant mathematician to figure that out. All right. Let's see. Gary Gaston says, "Hi, Paul, do you think Hyatt will get more playing time this week?" Well, you've got Slayton in concussion protocol, and it's impossible to tell when he's coming out. So the answer would have to be yes. Jalen Hyatt would undoubtedly absorb a slew of those snaps. Javen, if DJ continues to play as bad as he did, how long do you think they will until they move on from him? Well, let's put it this way. We've told you before the season, and it still holds true. There can't be any excuses here. Okay? Daniel Jones has reached a fork in the road where he's either got to perform or not perform. And if he comes back this week and tears up Washington and the Giants are 1-1, well, then he's back to sea level again. And then everything is erased and you start week three fresh. And you start grading him from week three. Now, if he does poorly this week, well, that's two games in the books. I go with the Bill Polian theory, the Hall of Fame executive, who always said you have to go through a full month because September is, again, pseudo preseason football. You don't know what your team is until usually four games in. So, if you go with that theory, does Jones have to have a bad month before they decide to contemplate a change? You could put some logic to that, but it's certainly not going to be any time before then, at the very least. Okay, what do we have here? G-Men 7. Paul, it appears to me DJ doesn't see the field properly. He made quick reads and throw wide receivers open. His throws don't seem crisp. Something seems off. Velocity mechanics. Jones did say today that he needs to play fast, needs to find his rhythm. He did say that there were some things in the footwork he wanted to clean up. He and Brian Daboll rewatched every play from the game last week, and they did determine there was some footwork stuff that he needed to touch up. He said he needs to trust it more. Now, again, think about the factors that we talked about earlier in the show. The unit's not cohesive. They haven't played a ton of snaps under game conditions together. There's a lot of reasons why Jones may have been impacted like he was. But see, here's the problem. He's got to overcome that stuff. Okay? We can't be talking about reasons why anymore. Daniel Jones needs to be beyond that. He needs to play well in spite of things that are not working around him. That's where he needs to be now at this point in his career. It didn't work out in week one. I think there was just too many things that were disjointed. The avalanche of things that were off kilter, it was too much for him. You have to believe that with that game film, with those game snaps, hopefully with a really good week of practice, some of those disjointed factors will iron out around him a little bit. And now it's going to be up to him to step up and rise above that and do what needs to be done to lead his team to a victory. That's what Daniel Jones needs to do. I know he's got it in him, but until he shows it to everybody on Sunday, nobody's going to believe it. And that's fair, right? We always say, the tape doesn't lie. Believe what you see. Daniel Jones has a chance to let you see on tape what he's capable of in Washington on Sunday. All right. Let's see. What do we have here? Danny, year six duds. Salute you for trying, Paul. He can't polish a turd. DJ's awful. How he lasted 5+ years as a starter needs to be investigated. Again, I get it. Look, here's the really cool thing. And I mentioned this on one of the other shows. I don't know if it was this show or Big Blue Kickoff. Maybe it was, maybe it wasn't. Maybe it was just a show I was guesting on. The great thing about Giants fans is that they're passionate and they care. You absolutely revel in the team when they're doing great, and you absolutely ache when the team does bad. The worst thing that can happen is that you don't care. Right? That's the worst thing, is when you don't care. Because being a fan is all about investing emotion into a team because you hope they're going to make you feel good. And you know that nobody outside of the 72 Dolphins is going to run the table and make you feel good every week until that entire season and postseason are over. 72 Dolphins, the only team to do it. So you know there's going to be times, no matter how good a fan you are, that you're going to be very upset, very upset, very upset, very upset. Disappointed, frustrated, angry, you name it. That's going to happen. Because if you're a fan and you're invested in your team, then you've got to feel that way when they do badly. So I get you, Danny. I get you. It's okay to feel that way. I would love for you to get back to me next Wednesday. Should Daniel Jones show what he's got to show, and the team is all of a sudden 1-1, and they're back to sea level again. Because as much as you want to beat on him and the team for doing badly on Sunday, I would hope that you would give them the applause if they rebound and do what they need to do to play well and to win in week number 2. Just asking you to be fair, that's all. All right, let's see. What do we have here? Danny's got something here about Saquon, but look, I'm not even talking about the Eagles or Saquon Barkley right now. There's just no point in going there. There's too much going on right now with what the Giants have to deal with without talking about another team. All right, what do we have here? Javen says, as much as the defense didn't play well at all, the offense needs to go out there and put up points to give the defense a chance. I'm tired of seeing terrible offense. Hey, you know what? I agree. The Giants need to play complementary football. There was nothing complementary about what the Giants did on Sunday. And the worst part about it was they had a drive. Let me see here if I could pull up I want to pull up something for you guys. You really want to know, this is a good point. We talk about how complementary football is very important in the NFL. But really, this game, really, when you get down to it, this game really turned to, and there were a number of things that went poorly for the Giants. But here's where it really went bad. Bridging the first and second quarters, they were down 7-3. Jones brought them from their own 28-yard line into Minnesota territory. Actually, it was a second down and 11 at the Vikings 36. They got a false start against Illuminor and then a holding penalty against Wandale Robinson. So the 36-yard line of Minnesota is fringe scoring territory because that's a 54-yard field goal for Gineau. And it was only second down. So basically, they were right there. A chance to put some points on the board. At least make it 7-6. And you get two consecutive penalties. They wound up having 9 accepted penalties against the Giants on the day, which is horrific. So after that, penalties, you get Singletary in the flat for 9. Then a short pass, incomplete, to Wandale Robinson. So from the 40-yard line, the Giants decide they're not going to try a 58-yard field goal. And they punt it away. The ball is downed inside the 1. And instead of what you would have hoped for, complimentary football, you don't get complimentary football. You get a defense that allows the Vikings to drive 99 yards in 11 plays for a touchdown that makes it 14-3. And at that point, if you really want to rehash it and go over it in hindsight, those two series, that's where this game got away from the Giants. To that point, what do I have here? Darnold was 10 of 10 for 136 yards. He was flawless on that drive. In fact, Chandler was caught for a 3-yard loss on 2nd and 5 from the Giants 6. And on the 3rd play of the drive, on 1st down from the Vikings' own 12, they were called for a false start. And that was it. The rest of the 99-yard drive was all positive yardage for the Minnesota Vikings. Made it 14-3, and the entire complexion of the game was now all in the Vikings' hands. They were allowed to control the tempo. They were allowed to control the narrative. And they decided that they were just going to author the rest of that book. That's it. It's that simple. It's really that simple, folks. The Giants do something with that drive. They're already in scoring range. Do something with that drive. No. Not only did they shut down their own waterfall and lose potential momentum, they then opened the floodgates and allowed the Vikings to create momentum and their own waterfall. Exactly the opposite of complimentary football. That, right there, that in a nutshell, is what happened on Sunday and why the Giants performed so badly and got beaten heavily by a Minnesota Vikings team that should not have been able to dominate them like that because they do not have as much talent as the Giants do. All right. What do we have here? G-Men 7. The defense doesn't do anything to affect the quarterback. We can't get a rush off the edge. Have no disguises, nor enough blitzes. Do you feel we have ever disguised part of this D? Well, remember, Shane Bowen, the new defensive coordinator, is rare to blitz. That is not something he wants to do. Now, according to my game notes, as I was watching the game live, and I do try to take down formations and blitz packages while the game is being played. Again, I watch so many things on every single play, it can become very hairy. Giants sent a lot of fours. They did send some fives, few sixes, but no. No, the Giants were not a heavy blitz team because they don't want to be. They want their front four, and they believe, rightfully so, they've got the talent and the capability to do what needs to be done on their own without sending extra guys. They didn't show it Sunday. Flat out. They had the bowling ball in their hands, and they were told, this is what you need to do. And they threw a gutter ball. That's what happened. The front was not nearly as stout as it needed to be. It was that simple. The Vikings had a good plan. The Vikings out-executed. The Vikings controlled the narrative. There is no way the Washington Commanders should control the narrative against the Giants' front seven. They are not as talented as the Vikings up front. We will see what happens. Got to step up. Got to wake up. Got to step up. Got to do the job that you're supposed to do. Because this team is leaning heavily on that front seven to pave the way. All right, let's see what we got here. Okay. Christine says, I agree with most of what you're saying. There's some heartfelt fans out here that were at least hopeful to be competitive in the first game. Well, Christine, you couldn't be more right. Look, I looked at the talent on this, the 53, and I was like, all right, it's a middleweight team. The Giants are a middleweight. Vikings, all right, possibly a middleweight team also. No reason you can't win this game. Now, what was the warning sign that I have talked about? Again, I go back to it. The fact that the O-line in particular and the quarterback had barely played any snaps together during the preseason. In fact, Jones had two quarters of preseason game action with his receivers, okay? And he did not have any quarters behind his starting five offensive line. Remember, Runyon did not play against Houston. He had the sore shoulder. I did raise the issue then because I've been raising preseason snap issues for the better part of 10 years, and maybe even more than that. This is not a golden oldie on a 45 RPM record. Okay? No. This is something that I have been saying every year, every August, forever. And updated it, and even put it on a link if you like. It's an MP3. Starters need to play more in the preseason. So, I get it. I expected the Giants to win this game. I felt extremely confident. But I also told everybody, there's that little voice in the back that says, boy, it would be so much better if they had played more preseason snaps together. It was something that concerned me, but I overlooked it. I kind of pushed it to the side and said, no, the talent's going to prevail. It didn't. It turned out the disjointedness of this team on both sides of the ball was simply too much to overcome for anybody to get the Giants into the win column. And that's just the way it is. So now the question becomes, have they gotten enough, having played four quarters on Sunday, and they will have practice time this week? Is that enough to smooth out some of this disjointedness? We won't know till Sunday, because practice, as we all know, practice is nice, but it's not the same as a game. And really, that's what it comes down to, Christine. That's what it comes down to. We will not know until Sunday. We can all sit here and chat, and I'm surprised nobody wants to do a video call. I'd be glad to take a video call. We're coming up now on almost 8:30, almost an hour for the program. It comes down to this. No matter what we say, we can talk till we're blue in the face. We can talk about the Giants from now till kickoff at 1 o'clock on Sunday. And nothing's going to change the fact that until that game starts and we see this Giants team on the field, we will not know if they've done enough to sandpaper a bunch of those rough edges. We will not. So, there are a couple of things here. Watson Graves, hey, how about that? Watson, thank you so much. Appreciate the pop for sure. And again, I know you're one of the regulars on the program. So, big thumbs up to you. And again, thank you for being with us. My point to you is this. If you don't want to get ultra excited and anticipate Sunday's game, and you want to kind of mute your enthusiasm a little bit, that's okay. That makes perfect sense to me. Not that, hey, you have a right to feel how you want to feel. I'm not going to tell you how you should feel, because that's not my place. But here's what I will say. I can logically understand any fan who mutes their enthusiasm going into week two after what the Giants put on tape in week one. Come on. Obviously. That's purely logical, rational, and makes perfect sense. You know what doesn't make sense? What doesn't make sense is to scream, beat your fist on the table, brood, be furious and angry, and basically just spew hatred for the next, let's see, Thursday, Friday, Saturday, into Sunday, for the next 3.5 days, talking about how much you're disgusted with the team, can't stand the offense, want nothing to do with the quarterback. Exactly what good does that do? It does no good at all, except make you probably more miserable than you already are. So, logically speaking, it's probably better to just try to take a breath, calm down, chalk up that game to just one of the 16 teams that lost in week one, and say, okay, I'm going to look forward to week two. Even if I don't want to get totally jacked, I'm still going to look forward to week two, and I'm going to start thinking about how can the Giants do this, that, and the other thing against a totally rebuilding Washington Commanders team that they have gone 8-3-1 against since 2018. That probably makes a lot more sense, logically speaking. Oh, here we go, Christine. Oh, hey, Christine, how about that? Just want to be positive. Please, let's go, G-Man. And she chimes in with a contribution, and that's awfully kind of you, Christine. Thank you very much. And that's not what I'm pining for. I'm just pining for some reasonable and logical reactions and some rationale. Because, look, folks, I've lived through the Giants of Fran Tarkenton's era, you know, which was the second half of the black hole of the darkest era of Giants football. You know, the end of Yankee Stadium into the Yale Bowl. And the Yale Bowl was dreadful in 1973 and 1974. Shea Stadium in 1975, dreadful with a capital D. They build a new stadium in the Meadowlands. And you know what? Those first few years, dreadful. I've lived through all of that. I've seen it firsthand. I don't know how many of you have, but if you're old enough to remember those days, you know how those games made you really nauseous. All right? They made you really, really miserable. And some of what's happened in the last decade absolutely brings back some of those flashbacks. There's no question about that. But if there's one thing that I know I've learned, it's to apply logic. And this was one game out of 17. It would make a lot more sense to be 10 times more upset if this was game 17 and they needed this game to make the playoffs. Or for that matter, if it was a first-round playoff game and they went and got whacked like that. Now that would be a logical reason to be absolutely beyond belief, right? You skunk a game in that situation, any fan would tell you, like, that's just like really, 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 really bad. You skunk week one, there's 16 games to get it right. Oh, Christine, what do you got for me? Oh, look at this. Christine, born Jersey girl, 52 years, born New York Giants fan. Well, I'm not going to sing Jersey Girl because Bruce Springsteen would likely come over here and crack me over the head with his guitar because I can't do it nearly as well as he does. It's a great tune. I appreciate the fact that you are a Jersey girl and you are a big-time Giants fan, and that's awesome. So at 52, you also know some of what I'm talking about with some of the past years. In any event, you know, the truth of the matter is, that's what we're talking about here. Week one. One game. One loss. In each of the last two seasons, the Cincinnati Bengals lost their first two games of the season. They've already lost their first game this year. Joe Burrow has been as injury-plagued as Daniel Jones. I wonder how many people in Cincinnati are livid and furious at their team right now. All right, Javen, the rookie class looked pretty good on Sunday. What did you think of their performances? Well, Javen, I'll tell you, we mentioned it up top. Saw some good stuff from Neighbors. He did have one drop that he was very, very upset about. We did see a nice play by Muisao on the interception, went up and grabbed a 50-50 ball. We saw Drew Phillips force a fumble and punch one out. I mean, those are all good things, right? We saw Tyler Newbin blow up a couple of blockers on his way to a tackle. Hey, look, so I appreciate it. And yes, we did talk about it at the beginning of the program. That might have been glitched up with some of the sound troubles. So I'm glad you brought that topic back to the forefront. Let me get out of that. And we have Joanne. Joanne is on the video call. Hello, Joanne. How are you? Welcome to the program. Joanne, was there something, was there a question or a comment you wanted to make? Hello? Well, perhaps not. All right, we'll put you back down on the bottom, and maybe we'll try to go back to you one more time, and we'll see if we can't get you up here, and we'll give you an opportunity to try to ask your question one more time. All right, Joanne, hello. You are next on the Big Blue Breakdown. I guess not. All right. Well, Joanne, I appreciate you trying. I don't know, maybe you've got some issues with your computer or your microphone or maybe your internet connection. I'm not sure. I'm glad we got our audio squared away from the beginning of the program. Good news, we finally did. I'm willing to go another 10 minutes if you guys want me to stay. I think, we had a little glitch earlier, so I don't want to cheat you out of some time. But at the moment, looks like we're kind of dying down on some of the chats, and I don't have anybody making a video call. So what I can do, I will remind you that coming up on Friday, we'll be back with our exclusive preview with the three key matchups to watch between the Giants and the Commanders coming up on Sunday down in Landover, Maryland. Now, I will tell you this. It's very interesting as I look at the Commanders roster, and you know, there's no doubt you got to be excited about Brian Robinson Jr., the running back. He's a quality player, no question. And we all know that Daniels is a terrific runner and can really, really motor. But still, playing quarterback in the National Football League takes a lot more than just fast legs. Terry McLaurin, Scary Terry, as we always call him. You know, they've got some players. There's no doubt. But defensively speaking, you know, Bobby Wagner Jr. is playing middle linebacker. You know, obviously he knows Dan Quinn from when Quinn was a defensive coordinator in Seattle many years ago. So they brought him over here to be the sage to kind of run that Commanders defense. But my goodness. You know, he has been around forever, and you have to wonder what he's got left. The secondary is obviously very unimpressive, although they're hoping that Jeremy Chinn, who came over from Carolina, an often injured safety who had a lot of talent when he came out of the draft but has never reached his potential, they're really hoping that he's going to be receiving a renaissance, as they say, to help them. And they still have Jonathan Allen and Daron Payne at the defensive tackle spots. But it's not an overly impressive roster. They know they're in the middle of a rebuild. Cliff Kingsbury is their offensive coordinator for Dan Quinn. Joe Witt is their defensive coordinator. We remember Larry Izzo used to work for the Giants. He is their special teams coordinator. But this team has totally undergone an overhaul. New ownership, new front office, coaching staff. I mean, they're in complete rebuild mode. Giants, you want to take advantage of this. This is an opportunity to even the slate at 1-1. Do your job. Take care of business. Get back to sea level. And then worry about week three when you get to week three. Oh, Billboard Builds says, I was born in 67, so didn't play a lot of attention to the team till the 80s. I remember fans upset with Sims, upset with Eli. Winning changes the conversation. DJ needs to win. Billboards, you couldn't be more right. They booed Phil Sims. Sims was often injured. The team was just dreadful around him. And there were times that Phil asked the Giants to trade him. Thank goodness it didn't happen. And eventually it all worked out in 1984. When Phil finally secured the job for good under Bill Parcells. And the Giants were on their way now to being a contender for the next several years. So yes, I understand. And Eli Manning, by the way, for those of you who do not remember, back in 2007, there were a lot of doubts at the beginning of that season. People say maybe Eli Manning wasn't worth it. Ernie, of course, he had made the big trade to go get him. And there were people saying that maybe he just wasn't worth it. But the Giants had brought in Chris Palmer to be quarterback's coach that year. And he got Eli straightened out. And between Kevin Gilbride as the offensive coordinator and a shift of jobs for him and Chris Palmer as the quarterback's coach, all of a sudden it really started to click for Eli in 2007, of course, with the addition of Plaxico Burress. And what happened? The Giants started to rock. So, yeah. Yeah. I saw Eli boo, too. And at the end of his career. And, oh, yeah, Kerry Collins, who had fumbleitis when he first got the Giants job. But then somehow he was able to fix that and brought the Giants to a Super Bowl. It's not always easy. It's not always a direct path. But it can work out. No matter how bleak it might look for your quarterback at the beginning, when there are a lot of other factors that have sabotaged him, there is always a chance that it will eventually work out. All right, appreciate the comment, Billboards Builds. He says here, oh yeah, it's another one. Just realized I'm signed on my channel name. Oh well, my name is Chet. Okay, Chet. Like Chet the Jet Walker, who played for the Chicago Bulls back in the 70s. And I know you know that because you said you were born in 1967. You remember who Chet the Jet Walker was. All right. So, we got Joanne again. I'm going to try to add you to the stage, Joanne. Joanne, you're back on the program. We're going to give you an opportunity to ring us again. Hello? I think your microphone is probably on mute. That must be the issue. In any event, I appreciate it, Joanne. I would love to have you join us as part of the program. Maybe you can get that squared away for the next time that we do a show next Wednesday night. All right. Well, I guess that'll just about do it for this edition of the Big Blue Breakdown Live, unless somebody else out there has a question or a comment. Doesn't seem like there would be much reason to continue this program. I will tell you, again, the Giants had the four players not practice today. Muisau, Slayton, Olszewski, and McLeod. Oh, you know what I do want to mention to you? Adoree Jackson, I talked to him today. He said that he felt pretty good after the game on Sunday. Remember, that was on artificial turf. There'll be a real grass on Wednesday. And a lot of times when a guy comes into training camp late, playing a game on artificial turf can really hurt their legs a lot and cause them a lot of discomfort. Jackson said he still felt pretty good. And the amount of snaps that he got, he felt pretty good about them too. So that's good. Of course, we talked about the pass interference call where the receiver had actually reached around from behind Jackson and put his hand right over Jackson's eyes and face mask in what clearly should have been offensive pass interference, but was erroneously called defensive pass interference. It was a big play. It did help set the Vikings on their way, but that's not the reason that the Giants lost. In any event, Jackson said he did feel good coming out of the game, and he felt good today as well. So I did want to pass that along. So if McLeod is unable to go or is limited on Sunday in Washington, you can expect maybe a Dory Jackson to up his snap count. And that would be a big benefit for him. All right, folks. Well, that'll do it for this edition of the Big Blue Breakdown Live. I'm Paul Dottino. Catch us for our exclusive three key matchups to the game against the Washington Commanders. That will come your way on the New York Giants on SI YouTube channel on Friday. And then, of course, we'll be back next Monday with our game balls and gassers. And then next Wednesday, another edition of the live program. So until then, so long, everybody.
At Kroger Pharmacy, CARE is making it easy to get vaccinated. CARE is helping you stay protected from flu, COVID, and RSV. Seasonal vaccines are available 7 days a week with evening hours. CARE is giving you a shot at staying healthy this season. Walk in whenever is best and get multiple vaccines in one visit at your local Kroger Pharmacy. So come and get the protection you need while protecting those around you. Kroger Health, a world of care, is in store. Visit Kroger.com/vaccines for more. Restrictions and exclusions apply. See site for details.